super strong, supernatural, and super bad. His punch can topple a skyscraper. His kick can split the earth in two. More destructive than an earthquake, mightier than a tidal wave. A one-man disaster area.
42nd Street Pete.
Shot full of lead and he still ain't dead. Jump back, Jack, for your skull is cracked.
42nd Street Pete.
All right, we seem to be back on our regular schedule here now that Todd got done shooting his epic movie, or, you know, he'll spend the rest next 10 years editing his epic movie. But be that as it may, while we've been, you know, bouncing in and out, a good friend of ours has had some interesting stuff happen to him. And being that we're just 6 short weeks away from his Wasteland appearance, figure we get him back on. So, again, welcome back to the show, Gary Kent.
Yay. Hello. Hey, guys. How are you?
Great.
Todd?
Great.
Good to have you,
Pete?
Man.
Good, good.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, and you say you're doing well with everything that's going on, health-wise and stuff.
Yeah, so far, knock on wood, you know, I'm so lucky to still be, to not be pushing up them daisies, man. It's not time yet.
Great. You got a ways to go yet. You know, you got to hang in there with me because we got some stuff we got to do.
Absolutely.
Since the last time you've been on, there's been some stuff bouncing around the internet, and I had to get caught up on this. And you're going to be the subject of a documentary film.
Looks that way, Pete. How about them apples?
We have in the house right now Joe O'Connell, who has put this thing together. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, my
hey,
pleasure.
Joe.
Why don't you guys tell us how this whole thing gelled?
Well, back in the late 90s, I went to a writer's conference, and I met this guy, this cool guy with the silver hair and the Burt Reynolds mustache, if Burt Reynolds was still cool, and got to talking to him, and he told me about how he starred in this movie, Satan Sadist. And I went home, and in Austin, Texas, you can go find Satan Sadist. You go down to I Love Video in Austin. You can find anything, and I grabbed it, watched it that night, and told my then girlfriend, now wife, about it. And I said, man, I gotta write about this guy. So I had to track him down, wrote a couple stories about him, and then became friends with him. And we've written screenplay together. And at one point, I said to Gary, I said, somebody needs to make a documentary about you. And then I realized that I was that guy. You know, and I'm compelled by his story, both as a stuntman, actor in independent films, director, and all, you know, his incredible career, but also who he is as a person, and the challenges that he has faced. You know, he lost his wife to cancer. She had some challenges of her own. You know, in many ways, outside of being a stuntman, he's had more challenges than he did being a stuntman. So, you know, it seemed natural to me, and I think anybody who meets Gary agrees. You know, he's a compelling guy, and there needs to be a movie made about him.
Well, I totally agree. Totally agree.
Yeah.
Well, I met Gary back, he was my first Wasteland panel, actually, him and Ted Michaels and Shantae. Going back, a few Wastelands ago.
Was Bud Cardos at that? I've been trying to remember.
That was before I got there. You were with Bud and I think Graydon Clark.
Right.
Maybe Bill Smith. I don't know. He had some kind of might have been something to do with Al Adamson's films or something. Maybe I don't know. He had a bunch up there.
You're absolutely right, Pete. See why you get the big money.
Yeah, then when I got up there, you were up there with Ted, and we had that big panel.
Yeah, that was great. That was a great panel.
Yeah, we're gonna revisit that because you know, a lot has, you know, gone down since then, and you know, you've been on my show, I don't know how many times, a bunch of times, and every time you're on, the people just love it. So I think you and I decided we're gonna talk about some of the guys you had worked with that, you know, unfortunately are no longer here.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be very cool. And I told Joe to come up and shoot, you know, this whole thing because from a documentary standpoint, that's going to be one of the best weekends ever because, you know, you're going to be interacting with the fans, you know, the panel, then God only knows what's going to happen at night. So I got a pretty good idea, but
yeah. I just remember how that party shifted from the interior of the bar to the parking lot, where it went on till like 4 every morning.
Yeah, I keep telling myself I don't have to stay up past 3 o'clock, but somehow it always happens. It just always happens that way. And go ahead.
I was just going to ask Todd how his movie turned out.
Ah, so far so good. Looking pretty kick-ass.
Joe Todd just made a movie of his own.
What's the movie?
It's called House of Forbidden Secrets.
Yeah? What's it about? What's the log line?
Man, I don't know. It's such a it's so hard to describe in one word or less, but it's kind of a haunted house movie like no other, and it's got a lot of really cool stuff going on, and kind of an epic, really. It turned into kind of a mini grindhousey kind of cool epic, kind of a throwback.
Well, cool, yeah. Ours is called Love and Other Stunts, and we've been doing an Indiegogo campaign.
That's cool.
It's not quite done, but we reached our goal, so we'll still take donations. But,
of course.
People want to give them to us, but we reached our goal yesterday.
That's very cool.
Yeah, but people want to check it out. Go to Indiegogo and look for Love and Other Stunts. You can also see a lot of clips, including some early clips from the movie, some raw stuff, raw footage, and a lot of pictures, a lot of photos of Gary.
Gotcha.
I met Joe, as he said, at a writer's conference, and Joe is a very good writer. He has an award-winning novel out called Evacuation Plan. He also has written for Texas Monthly and had columns in most of the big Texas newspapers. So he, knowing Joe from that standpoint, I knew he knew how to find a story. And if he thought there was a story here, if anyone could get it, he would. And whatever value this documentary may have, I think Joe's just the perfect fellow to ferret it out. And he's got another guy with him, working with him, named Drew Thomas, who's an incredible young editor, really sharp editor, who's also familiar with the project. And at first, I thought this was just going to be a documentary about stunts and stuntmen, because, Pete, I had all the guys down there. I had Chuck Bale, I had Bud Cardos, I had Bob Ivey. They were all down here staying at my place for this book opening, and that's when Joe popped up with his cameras. So I thought, man, this is a one-time thing. Where are you going to get these guys together other than Cinema Wasteland?
When Gary's memoir came out and all these guys were going to be there, that's when we knew we had to start shooting. So that was kind of when it all began. You know, that was when it was time to put up or shut up, you know. And,
man, it was a great book, too. That's, you know, people still talk about it. It's still, you know, I'm sure you're going to have a line of people holding the book up at Wasteland that want to get it signed, too.
I hope so.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. That'd be very cool.
Oh, yeah.
So I can't wait.
Oh, I think Ken's got something cooked up for you, too, a little prequel to our, you know, panel that should be
coming. Oh, does he really?
Yeah, no, I don't want to let anything out of the bag, but, you know.
How's Ken doing?
He's actually working my ass off with this thing. You know what I started doing? Buying film prints. I was doing this while I was still in Jersey, just as a lark, because I had extra money. And
right.
We ran a couple of them last Wasteland. I had Macon County Line and Condor.
Yeah.
And we ran them, and people liked them, so I just got into this whole thing, and I actually found a projector on eBay that was made for the Army in 1987.
Wow.
They never used them, and they shipped them all back to this company, and the guys got them up as like, you know, buy it now, free shipping, $600, and I'm like, well, I don't want to go $600. So, of course, I lowballed me, came up with, look, best I'm going to do is $500 shipped. And
right.
We got this thing. We went over tens, and self-threading. I mean, you can't even hear the damn thing run.
And wow.
We checked out a bunch of other films, and we found a little cigar mob I picked up, which is Angel Tompkins and a Midget Gang, which is, it was marketed as a comedy, but it's not. It's pretty serious.
Angel Tompkins, you're kidding me.
Ah, her and Billy Curtis is in it, Felix Silva from the Addams Family. And even sure. Angelo shows up toward the end.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What's the title again?
Yeah. It's called The Little Cigar Mob.
Little Cigar Mob, okay.
Yeah.
That is awesome, because I bet, have you got a print of that, Pete? Is that
yeah, I got a 16mm print. We're gonna screen it at Wasteland Saturday
wow.
night.
Felix yeah. would love that.
Yeah, well, unless I can figure out a way to put it on a DVD, which I don't think I can, which, you know, unless I pay somebody, but, you know, somebody probably owns a damn thing. It's just, you know, one of those rare little... You know, another one I got has one of your old friends in it, Gary, Nightmare of Wax, Cameron Mitchell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, Bud's in that, too, as a cop.
Is he really?
Yeah, real young Bud Cardos.
Oh, I'll be done.
As Johnny Cardos.
Yeah. Yeah, I just talked to Bud, golly, last week.
How's he doing?
He's doing pretty good. He's slowing down like so many of us, like you and I had planned to talk about some of the people we've lost through the years. Every time I talk to the stunt guys now, I was telling Joe this, every time Chuck and I talk, there's usually been a couple of more from the old stunt gang that have passed away. Kind of sad in its way.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, you know, I had this discussion. I don't know if you remember a director named Nick Phillips. He used to work under S.S. Millard, things like that. But all of his films, you know, he used to do a lot of porn stuff. But every film he ever did had a downbeat ending. And I said to him, I go, you know, why do you go that way? And he goes, because life itself has a downbeat ending. We all die. So I couldn't argue with that logic, but unfortunately, that's what happens. But
yeah,
I'm sure there's a place for all of us in the great beyond, some big grindhouse, you know, with all the stuff running, you know, for eternity. So that's what I'm banking on, anyway. You know,
yeah.
If I got to have one, you know, one little thing to grasp onto, that would be it. But you know
why
what I mean?
Why not?
Yeah.
I'm looking on the computer at the poster for the Little Cigars Mob. Little cigars are hazardous to your health, it says.
Oh, it's funny.
It looks pretty cool.
Oh, it's great. You know, there's one scene that she, I guess her and Billy Curtis become an item or something because they wound up in bed together during the film. And then she leaves and she's in a bar with some redneck. And he just comes in and he goes, come on, we're leaving. And the guy throws him on the floor. He jumps up on the bar and kicks the guy in the face and just starts beating the shit out of him. I mean, it's a really good fight. I was just sitting there. I popped for the whole thing. I mean, this is, I never saw it and Ken never saw it. And I don't think it ever got to my area. I think it would have probably been more likely to play out here with the drive-ins and stuff.
And where did you get this print?
I don't know, off eBay.
Oh.
I guess you can find anything, yeah.
I bought, like, see, what we're going to do is actually, Ken and I are going down the horror realm, and we're gonna road show Macon County Line and Nightmare in Wax Friday night.
Wow.
Yeah, just to see how, you know, what the turnout is. Because, you know,
you know
yourself what's going on. You're getting rid of film.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more fun than film.
Was Macon County Line directed by Richard Compton?
Yeah. No. It was written by Jethro.
Yeah.
Written by Max Fair Jr.
And Richard Compton directed it. He was a good friend of mine.
Yeah. I think that he made enough money off that film, he retired, Max Baer.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was something where...
I think Macon County Line actually made money.
Yeah,
I mean, I remember it being, you know, pretty widely out there in theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think he financed it, and I think it was AIP released it. I think he cleaned up. He must have made some kind of hell of a deal, but he hasn't really done anything since then. I guess he's retired.
Yeah, I can't
Richard Compton made about one movie after that, one or two, and then he passed away. But before that, before he did Macon County Line, I had no idea he was going to direct. He was always a prop guy and a set dresser on Richard Rush films, which, you know, I loved the crews. He was a great guy, and they were usually a lot of fun, those films. But several of the crew that Richard had went on to direct. Another one was Bob O'Neill. You know Bob, Pete.
Yeah, he sounds familiar. What did he do now?
Well, he did all the Angel movies, Angel on Hollywood Boulevard, Angel.
Oh, yeah, right.
And Blood Mania, he did Blood Mania, and Psycho Lover.
Yeah, I love the Angel films. The Angel films are great.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a prop guy for Richard Rush, too.
Yeah.
Maybe I should have got into props.
Would have been safer.
Got no complaints.
Yeah, he's done it all. You've probably done props somewhere along the line anyway.
I think I have.
Special effect.
I think I have.
Yeah, and the one film that you directed, the Rainy Day Friends, which, you know, I have told people, you know, they have to see this thing because, you know, what, you know, you're going through now, what I went through, what a bunch of us went through, you know.
Right.
I've even, you know, gave a copy to a couple medical people. I says, I just want your opinion on this, you know. I know Ken doesn't want me to bring it up, you know, during the talk because, you know, a lot of guys up there are, you know, in between treatments and things like that. But I'll say it right here that if anybody buys this movie and it doesn't do something for you, I'll refund your money personally.
Wow.
Because that's the way I feel about it. No, I'm serious. And, you know, Joe would probably, you know, did you see it, Joe?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
sure. I've seen it in a theater.
Oh.
We did a little showing of it. That benefited hospice organization here.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
because I like, you know, Gary knows, I went through some, you know, some bad stuff with that, you know, and wound up, you know, they tell you one thing and then it winds up to be something else and you wind up in a hospital for a lengthy stay. And it's like that film just mirrored a lot of the stuff I went through. And, you know, it drove it home with me. And I, you know, told a bunch of people about it. And I think probably a lot of guys, you know, from Wasteland, I'd already ordered it already. You know, a couple of guys said they were going to order it before the show. So, it's you know, one of those films that, you know, it really, I can't see how it couldn't affect anyone. Because we all have to deal with, you know, certain stuff in our lives. And, you know,
That's a thing that I hope we have a chance to bring out tastefully in the documentary Joe's doing is the...
Sure, yeah.
Subject of cancer and how it was involved not only in Rainy Day Friends but in our personal lives and your life, Pete, and so many people I know. It's I forget the name of the writer, but she was a famous writer, and she was at a event I did for the Starlight Foundation in L.A., which gives last minute trips to people, to kids that are dying, their last wish comes true. And so it was a charity, and at that I shared a table with this woman. I wish I could remember her name. Famous writer. And I told her we were making Rainy Day Friends, and about a week later, she sent me a book. I got a book in the mail from her called Cancer as Metaphor, and how throughout history, cancer has always been a name, a bad name, like he had a cancer of the brain, or he had cancer of the mouth, or the town was just cancerous. It was never ever were we able to really kind of discuss it openly. It was always this dark, deadly kind of bad thing, and yet it's something that people have to. Gee, I'm on my soapbox already. Pete, stop me!
No,
I can't control myself.
No. Go ahead.
Is this Susan
Sontag
that you're talking about, Gary?
Susan Sontag, yes.
That's it. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. It's something that Pete went through, and I know a lot of it. Bud Gardos, too, Pete, went through it.
Yeah.
But had a rough time.
A good movie, too. Rainy Day Friends is, you know, you got Isai Morales, who's early in his career, playing a tough guy from the streets of L.A. You got Chuck Bale, you know, one of the top stuntmen, and doing a star turn that I think he does a great job in.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
What's interesting is to watch Chuck flying his, what was his plane? Was it a Stearman?
It was a Stearman, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a great scene, too. Yeah, Gary's done it all. That's why we're making the documentary. He's done it all. He's made a couple of films. You know, The Pyramid is the other one that he made. I was at Gary's house one day, And we saw that I saw the movie sitting there, the reels, and I said, "What's that?" So, well, that's the pyramid. I was saying, "You got to get that out of here and get it out and shown somewhere." And we ended up having a showing in Austin at that time. But it, I think it kind of spurred him to get that movie back out, and it's out on DVD too now. His wife is in it. That was when he first met his wife, Tommy Barrett, who also was in The Forest with him. And was his producing partner when he was doing these two films. Producing partner for Rainy Day Friends. And she's a big part of the documentary. I mean, telling Gary's story, the two of them together, you know, that's a big deal in the film. Along with just talking about his incredible career, you know.
I'm going to have to watch The Forest again. I don't remember seeing her in The Forest.
But yeah, she's... Who's she in The Forest, Gary?
She plays...
They all by different names, right?
Sharon, yeah. She has a title, Elaine Warner, in The Forest. She used that name.
Yeah.
And so we wouldn't get in trouble with the Screen Actors Guild.
I think she survives in that movie, right? Her character?
Yeah, she is the survivor.
Yeah.
Gets to kill me.
That's right.
I wondered a bit
about
that.
Here he goes
down. I just saw that.
But
on
that was fun. That was a great, great, you know, who was it? Goldie Hawn said she judged a movie by the experience she had making it. And I did too a lot. I just did so many movies. Some of them, though, just stood out because it was so much fun making it. The crew, the cast, everybody was like really groovy and everybody got on the same trip. And there were nobody was a diva. It just, and that Forest was one of them. It just was a blast from beginning to end making that movie. Whatever you think of it.
Yeah, and Gary got to eat people, so, you know, that makes him happy. He got to be a cannibal.
Right.
In that film.
That's what made me buy it. I was like, okay, another cannibal film. That was before I knew Gary. That was before I knew Gary, though.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I was on eBay the other night, and I said, let me punch in The Forest, because I still got a handful of them laying around here. They got one. I mean, they must have double featured it with another movie, and the guy wants like $600 for the DVD. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Wow.
You're kidding.
Nah. I mean, I just sold a copy for $30.
Wow.
I don't know whether they're going out of print or, well, you had that problem with that moron that's up there anyway, who's, you know.
Yeah, that's a whole story. Another thing I don't understand at all. I don't think Jonesy does. Don Jones, the guy that directed it, hasn't heard from them forever. And
you know what it is? I think a lot of these guys are just doing stuff and they're just sitting back hoping they don't get caught or whatever, and then like you say, you don't have the money to go after him. Don don't have the money to go after him. I don't have the money to go after him.
But right.
It just seems like there's a ton of these guys coming out of the woodwork that the minute something's copyright up or whatever license is up, they just jump on it, put it out, and hope they don't get caught.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I think you're right.
We were talking about one of Don Jones' other films that Gary's in, Schoolgirls in Chains, and how it appears that somebody just remade the movie. Just, you know, the exact same plot. Who was I saying, Gary? We were talking about this. I think we were talking about this.
The son or the brother of Lloyd Kaufman.
Yeah, there's a movie called Mother's Day that is just the exact story.
Mother's Day? The one up in, that was shot up in Jersey?
Was it shot there? I don't know.
It was shot up in, wait a minute, Hackettstown.
So if you've seen Schoolgirls in Chains, you see it's pretty much the same movie.
Which one came out first?
Schoolgirls in Chains by about 6 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's funny, because I saw Mother's Day on a double bill with that horrible thing called Nightmare, which they've been trying to put out for the last 3 years, and it seems nobody can get a complete print of this thing or something. So.
Yeah, it's directed by Charles Kaufman.
Yeah.
So. Kind of interesting, and Gary wasn't sure whether Don Jones even knows that.
Yeah.
You know, that he even knows it exists.
I don't know. You know, there's so much of this stuff, you know, sneaks under the wire. It's like I was watching some British thing called The Doghouse, which is basically some toxic spill in some town in England causes all the women to go nuts and attack the men. And I'm sitting there going, Jack Ketchum wrote this book as Ladies' Night back in the 70s.
Right.
Yeah. Give him a credit, you know? But, you know, that's what these guys do.
Yeah. I remember not too long ago, I was in New York with Bob Ivey on a film we were shooting for the Chinese, and Bob had worked as a stuntman in a Harrison Ford movie that was just coming out. And he wanted to, he said, when it's out on DVD, not DVD, but tape, back then it was VHS. He said, when it goes out on VHS, I want to buy it because I do stunts in it. I walked down in the street and it was already for sale on the street for aftermarket. I mean, that quick. Ripped off versions were already selling.
I'm willing to bet I worked for the guy who did it too down the road.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I wound up working for New York City Liquidators, and he was the biggest bust of counterfeit tapes in the history of the East Coast.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was back in. I wasn't even buying counterfeit tapes. I had just been introduced to him. He was a good source for used tapes and porn when I had my store.
Right.
I got to be friendly with him and stuff, and I knew what he was doing, but I didn't give a shit because I wasn't buying any of this stuff. Everybody kept going, you know, they're watching that place, and I go, yeah, and the only reason you're telling me that is you want me to buy off you when he's got the better deal. I said, I'm not doing nothing wrong, so I don't care.
Yeah.
So one day I'm sitting in one of my part-time jobs. I get a phone call. Turn on Channel 7. And they're walking all these guys out in handcuffs. I'm like, holy shit, they finally got him.
Wow.
So he was closed for, like, I don't know, maybe a week and a half. And they let him out for whatever reason. I heard a bunch of stuff. But
wow.
Something about that they claimed they found over $360,000 in loose change in his house. And after I went to work for him, you know, he's opened up a little bit to me, and he goes, remember when I put that in the paper? And I go, yeah. And he goes, it was three times that much. How do you think I got out in 7 days? But yeah, he was like one of the main guys. It was incredible. I mean, I see him coming in and the ink was still wet on the boxes.
Now, how do they get that stuff so fast? Is somebody in the lab, or how do they get it on the street when the film is just open?
I heard so many stories. One of them I heard was because at certain hotels you could get current movies that were playing in the theaters. That he would fly guys. He would pay these guys to go out to these hotels and hook up to, you know, and copy it.
Mm.
You know? They were doing a lot of screeners too. I mean, you know, half the time you'd be sitting there watching something, and property of so and so. Like, what the hell's that?
Right, I see what you're saying.
You know, a lot of it was, you know, the industry's own fault because they were just handing out screeners willy nilly to anybody.
Yeah,
I mean, I know it's probably worse now with the internet and the torrent sites and the downloads and stuff. That's set to hurt me a lot, but he was the guy back then.
But I wound up working. Now they're streaming, it seems like.
Yeah. Then I wound up working for him for, God, I don't know, a good many years till he passed away. And part of my deal working for him was, you're not going to do anything that's going to get me put in jail, are you? No, you're not.
Yeah.
So I kept the leash on him, which was fun sometimes.
Sure, I'll bet.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, I could write a book about that place. It was so crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Do you miss those days? Do you miss Broadway? Do you miss New York?
Yeah, back in the heyday, yeah, I do. I miss the 70s, and I miss, you know, not so much the 80s because it was getting really crappy in the 80s. But,
yeah.
You know, actually going to work over there for him, I wouldn't have traded that for anything. It was an experience. You know, as nuts as it was, and, you know, I leave the place wanting to kill people and shit, but, you know,
right.
I think back, like, wow, that was like the last of the old-timers, you know, the old-time hustlers.
Yeah.
He would tell you he was going to screw you right to your face.
He was
the best.
Yeah.
He'd tell you he was a scoundrel. And then when I was a customer, it got to be like, you know, this mental hopscotch game. I tried to get over on him, and he tried to get over on me, and we both knew it. So then it became a mutual respect thing. Because I could convince him I wasn't making a dime on what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I actually got him to believe it. Pretty good. But I do miss those. A lot of it I miss too is because of the movies and the theaters over there too. Because you know yourself how, you know, you walk down 42nd Street and everything was just wedged in. It was like just anything you wanted to see. You know,
there was.
It was just
absolutely 42nd Street, man.
And that's part of why I'm getting into this projecting film, because it's going to be a lost thing, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, unless you get low fade, you know, Mylar, you know, newer prints, the older prints are just fading away.
Yeah.
I got a copy of Hellbenders, and it's brown. I mean, contrast is still good, but there's no color.
Yeah.
Blue River's brown.
Yeah, it goes.
Yeah.
Joe, what got you interested in film? I've never known that.
You know,
in the first place, you have this immense affection and curiosity for film. Where did that come from?
Well, when I was a kid, there was a television station in San Antonio. My father, the divorced family thing, I would go to my dad's on Friday nights because he had cable television in Austin, Texas. And cable television meant they showed San Antonio stations. That's all it meant. And they had a program in San Antonio called Project Terror, where the scientific and the terrifying merge. And they played all those old 50s sci-fi horror films.
Really?
And I was just totally into it. I'd slept in a little cot in front of the TV at his place and would watch all those movies.
Wow. You know,
the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, sure.
All those old movies. You know, whatever that Michael Landon is a werewolf. I forget what that's called.
Oh, right.
Teenage Werewolf, yeah.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff, you know. So I was kind of bred on that. And then, you know, when I was a teenager, they showed Bogart movies all the time, every weekend. Every Sunday night, they showed Bogart movies. They're just basically all the gangster movies, with George Raft and Ever G. Robinson, you know.
Oh yeah, I love them.
I was totally into that. So I just, you know, I guess it just kind of happened. It's, you know, so and it just kind of turned into something as far as part of my career too, because I was a journalist and I started writing about film, and then I ended up having a column in the Austin American Statesman about the Texas film industry, which became a column in the Austin Chronicle, which became a column in the Dallas Morning News, which I ended a year ago just because I've been doing that too long. But I've written for Variety and a lot of places like that. The old Video Business, when that still existed, do stuff for them. So I like storytelling. You know, and I'm a fiction writer, so it just kind of it all kind of goes together. And this film's the same thing. That's what this documentary. That's what I tell Gary, is that I'm interested in the story. You know, certainly interested in all of the cool stunt stuff, but underneath that, there's also the story of Gary. You know, there's I don't know what the name of it is, but there's a documentary about Robert Evans. And I was telling Gary that I'm inspired by that film to tell Gary's story, because whoever made this Robert Evans documentary knew that they had to let him tell his story, because he's an interesting guy, you know, you like him or don't. He was a big impact on Hollywood. You know, he was in the background there, and he's kind of a quirky, interesting guy, larger than life, and I think Gary's a larger than life guy too. That he needs to kind of be telling his own story in this documentary. That's a big, long, rambling answer there.
I know where you're coming from, because it, weirdly enough, I got into it the same way. When I was, I'm like 60 years old now. And when I was growing up, there was such a thing called a kiddie matinee. Basically a precursor to sticking a kid in front of a TV and slapping a video cassette, and except you had to drop him off at a movie theater, give him $1.50 to get in, 50 cents for snacks, and you were good till 5 o'clock. And basically what my parents really didn't know was the kiddie matinee consisted of 3 Warner Brothers cartoons, a 3 Stooges short, and 2 horror movies. And being that we were good Catholics, if they had known the horror movies were there, that would have never happened. But my brother, we're not. The first ones we saw were like Curse of Frankenstein or Horror of Dracula. That was the first kiddie matinee.
Cool.
So I'm like walking out of there, going to my little brother. I go, we're not going to say a damn word about this, are we? So we never did. We just, you know, every weekend, you know, that was it. So I got to see a lot of the AIP stuff on the big screen, and some of when they did, you know, the Universal re-releases on Real Art. I saw a lot of them like down there too.
Yeah.
So
when I was like, you know, 12 or whatever, I was going to the closest thing, I guess, to Grindhouse in Austin, Texas, which are, they're really nice theaters now, but the State and the Paramount on Congress Avenue in Austin were kind of dumpy back then. I got, you know, I needed to put my money in my shoe because I'd get frisked in the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know, I go see movies like The Frogs.
Yeah.
All these, you know, The Legend of Boggy Creek, things like that.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Lots of fun stuff. And I just get, my dad would drop us, my friends and I, off there. Same type thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I was, I was into all the horror stuff.
Yeah, even the ones in New York, I know what you mean. You know, you'd want to get mugged in the bathroom, but I was like, you know, 6'2" when I was like 17, so people really didn't give me that much shit. And then as I got older, I got uglier, so, you know, people gave me less shit. I always told people, because everybody goes, you know, how dangerous. I said, you know, usually if you were looking for a problem, you'd find it, but if you look like you're out of place, you'd find a problem too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That was the whole crux of the thing, as far as movie going, anyway.
Yeah.
And, it's like, you know, I tell people, you know, you can't walk away from having a conversation with guys like Gary, Ted Michaels, Bud, and guys like that without learning something. And
oh, for sure, yeah.
That's my big beef with all these other conventions where I try to explain this stuff to them, and they don't get it. But what I did was I told two promoters I know that are going to be at Wasteland to please sit in on this panel and then tell me why you wouldn't want to book Gary at your fucking conventions. So.
Yeah. And Gary just always freaks me out because he'll all of a sudden come up with a new story I've never heard before. You know, he'll suddenly start talking about Charles Bukowski. Gary was telling me a story the other day, Bukowski peeing on his shoes. Tell that story, Gary.
Yes.
You just throw this stuff out, you know.
People say, have you read Bukowski? Well, some of his work, yes, but I did have him pee on my shoes. But Bukowski, as you know, was just sort of a drunk, a pretty heavy-duty drunk. He wrote a lot and has a lot of fans. And L.A. loved him, but they loved him drunk or sober, and he was drunk most of the time. And he had a particular yardage that he would haunt, which was from the Rain Check, a bar on Santa Monica, to Barney's Beanery and back. He would go up and down that little section of town and cage drinks from people and disappear back in the alley and live back there and get a sandwich and drink his wine and then come up and accost someone again. So we just knew him from that walk, and once in a while he would have enough, he would come into Barney's or the Rain Check and sit and argue with you, but he was always wanting to get in a fight or get in an argument. And so I just sort of kind of liked him and ignored him. But when that night I was walking with Paul Lewis, of all people, from the Rain Check to Barney's, and there was Charles. And Gary, come here. And I went over and was standing there, and I couldn't figure out what he was going to ask me for a light or something, because he got right up in my face. Then all of a sudden I looked down, and he was pissing on my shoes. So I hit him.
Sounds like Lawrence Tierney.
Yeah.
Gary
just throws these stories out. You know, you've never told me that before. You know?
But it's true.
I haven't been through it as much as he has, but, you know, I got a shitload of good ones, too. And it's like the dumbest thing will trigger off a memory where you all of a sudden give me a pen, I got to write this down, because I just remembered something.
Right.
Or maybe I killed too many brain cells doing what I usually do.
Yeah. And then Gary was hanging out with, you know, or not hanging out with, but had Charles Manson kind of in the background when they were out at Spahn Ranch.
Oh, yeah, those stories are great, especially when Bud threw Tex Watkins in the bushes.
Right. Man, I can't believe the people I've known or wandered through just by sheer luck or happenstance. It includes about 7 murderers, at least. In the Hollywood scene, I was involved with some, from Al Adamson's murder to Charlie Manson to Bobby Blake. I mean, if he did murder, and most people think he did, but These are all people I either knew or where Bobby used to take his wife before he supposedly shot her the night where it occurred, was an Italian restaurant called Vitello's, which was Chuck Bale's favorite restaurant. And Chuck Bale and I, when we were writing Street Corner Justice, we would go there every night for dinner, and Bobby Blake would frequently be in there. I'd worked with him years and years and years before, but he used to get that one particular booth every night, he and his then wife, because they lived not too awfully far from there. And the next thing I know, the murder happens right around the corner.
So what film were you in with him?
I'm sorry?
What film were you in with Blake?
I was in a picture called Battle Flame years and years and years ago with Scott Brady.
Okay. That's Lawrence Tierney's brother.
I'm sorry?
That's Lawrence Tierney's brother.
Scott Brady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I love Scott Brady. I just thought he was the greatest guy.
Who was also in Satan Sadus, right?
Yeah, yeah, he was in Satan Sadus, and he was had a pretty good career going at one time. Was doing some. He was a better actor, I thought, than Lawrence. And
yeah,
probably.
He was doing a lot of cowboy stuff, wasn't he, Scott?
Yeah, he did some cowboy stuff, and he'd been a prize fighter, a heavyweight boxer, and a damn good one. And well, so had Lawrence, but Scott was better, and Scott was saner too. I mean, he would be a pretty tough bar fighter. When I got to L.A., everybody was saying the two guys you don't want to fight are Lawrence Tierney and his brother, Scott Brady. So I knew right away, no, I don't want to mess with those guys. They just had that reputation of all the tough guys considered a Sinatra and his boys. Sinatra always had a bodyguard that would, you know, handle things for him. But Scott and Lawrence would just do it for the fun of it.
Yeah, I think Eddie Bunker tells a story on one of the extras of Reservoir Dogs that him and Lawrence squared off in a parking lot, Scott and Lawrence together.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Who knows? I mean, you go back to, you know, like brothers beating each other up. I remember the original Wild Samoans. When they used to get bored, they used to pound on each other, and things weren't going their way in the ring, whether the guys weren't selling for them or something. They beat each other up.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Those guys were big boys.
You ever know the Houston wrestling scene?
Some of it.
Because it was huge,
yeah,
evidently.
Paul Bosch was the promoter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's legendary. Trying to think who, you know, a lot of guys came out of here. There was a lot of different territories in Texas. San Antonio had theirs. I think Joe Blanchard ran that. Of course, you know, Devon Erickson. Was Devon Erickson Houston? Or that was Dallas.
More Dallas.
Yeah, more Dallas.
Was it?
Yeah,
sad story with those guys.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think there's only one left alive. Yeah, they
yeah, David.
Know themselves, yeah.
What was they? Were they a family? Or so? Why do
name? They were a family, but see, the whole thing was Fritz Von Erich was, I think his real name was Jack Atkinson, Addison or something. And he was, you know, his big thing was he was a German heel, Fritz Von Erich, you know, with the claw hold and stuff. So, you know, and he got down into Texas and, you know, got into a promotion. He pushed his sons into it. Well, you know, a couple of them, you know, were, you know, they were legitimately
they were big
good.
Time, yeah.
Yeah, but some of the other guys, the younger guys he put in, they weren't cut out to be wrestlers. And unfortunately, David died in Japan under weird circumstances. They said he died after a match, but he never even got to a ring. I think he was partying. And I think Bruiser Brody found him dead. And then, let's see, Kerry got in a motorcycle accident and lost his foot. And they covered the whole thing up, and he went to work for Vince, but he kept failing drug tests, and I think he was looking at doing actual time, and he committed suicide. And then the two younger brothers committed suicide.
Yeah.
So, and
wow.
There's actually, you know, I'll give you the DVD at Wasteland. I know I got an extra one laying around. It's called The History of World Class, and it's better than the one Vince put out because they don't pull any punches. They tell the whole story. It's a really good documentary.
Wow.
Unfortunately, Gary Hart, who was in it, passed away right after they did it.
Hmm.
Yeah, he was on leave.
There's a curse on that family, I tell you.
Well, they said almost everybody who went through that territory, you know, Brody was killed in Puerto Rico. He was a big mainstay in that territory. Buzz Sawyer, cocaine overdose. They said that, you know, I think it's on this documentary that like 50 or 60 people who worked for that area died really young, and mostly from drugs and stupidity.
Yeah.
Crazy. But unfortunately, that business is a lot of drugs and stupidity at times, so.
Yeah, yeah. You guys know Bob Ivey, the stuntman. He played the mummy in Bubba Hotep also.
Right. Yeah.
He was from Houston, and his mother's sister was married to the biggest wrestling promoter. You would know him, Pete, in the entire South. He happened to live in Houston, but he was the biggest known throughout the South. So Bob knew all these guys personally. He used to go to all the matches free.
Yeah, I'm trying. How did he pull? I think he was the biggest one.
Maybe that was him.
Yeah, I started walking into this stuff for free because I did something. Sabu got into a real medical situation. He couldn't pay his bills, and wrestler that was in Rutherford, he wrestles his Crowbar. He did a benefit for him, and they were doing an auction. And I asked him, I go, you ever do an auction before? And he goes, no. And I go, well, I have. I can do it for you. So I did it, and the cool thing was Sabu was actually there. He just got out of the hospital. So I got to bullshit with him for 2 hours, and he, you know, turned to be a really cool guy. So,
wow.
But after that, I started just walking into places, and nobody even questioned me. Not that I was trying to get over, but.
Yeah, yeah.
For you know, while in Jersey, I say, you know, the boom period was, it's over now, but while it was going on, I, you know, basically was walking in, just hanging out with, you know, crowds of like 2,000 people, because it was that hot.
Wow,
you know,
yeah.
The guys knew me and liked me, so that was never a problem, so. But then it all folded up, like everything else does.
Yeah. Why do you think?
I think on the East Coast it was an oversaturation and everybody was using the same guys because that's all they could use. And then, you know, when somebody really got hot, either Vince or, you know, TNA would take them.
Ah.
So, you know, it got to be, you know, it was one crew and then a couple of them got picked up by, you know, the big guys. And then, you know, another crew came in. But then a lot of the guys were doing that hardcore shit and get really fucked up where they couldn't work.
Right.
You know, they'd be good for a couple of years and all of a sudden that was it. No more.
Wow.
Who was the guy, the kid that was with Vince? Edge, he had to stop. He said if he continued, he'd die. He was just hitting his peak. So
Who was it?
His name was Edge. He used to work as Edge. I think his real name was Adam Copeland.
I don't remember him.
Yeah, he was big with the ladder matches, and there was a big thing about him getting involved with somebody else's girlfriend, and then that guy got fired and he didn't.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So he was just you know, then all of a sudden it was like, guess what? You can't work anymore because if you do, you'll die.
Wow.
So, you know, you've seen how the pace has picked up, Gary, in the recent years.
Yeah,
it's like they used to be in ECW, and then like who was it? Bad Breed, the Rotten Brothers. Terry Funk asked him to take it easy because he had to follow him, and he goes, you know, I can't top you guys, but please take it easy because they were doing all this crazy shit. So,
yeah.
Out of respect for him, they did. They said they wouldn't do it for anybody else, but for him, they'd do it.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, that business just became, you know, can you top this? And God, two of these deathmatch guys committed suicide last year.
Yeah.
Sad.
That's
they were trying to lay that on the roids, though, weren't they?
On
the steroids?
I don't know. Well, you know, it was Mike Graham, who was down in Florida, committed suicide, and so did his father. And he was like 52, I think. Brad Armstrong died in his sleep, and he was in his 50s. And there was a good worker that never got his due. This guy that was running around the deathmatch circuit, brain damage, one of the guys that comes to Wasteland, another deathmatch guy, Toby Klein, trained them, and he committed suicide last year.
Wow.
But they said, you know, these guys get all, you know, they get all fucked up, they do all this stuff, they start taking painkillers and shit, and then, you know, what happens? You know,
yeah.
It's sad, but
yeah.
And then people got, you know, they're going to induct Bruno Sammartino into the Hall of Fame finally. They reached out and did this whole deal because he said he would never ever do anything with McMahon or anything like that. And somebody made a snide comment, and I said, you know something, This guy, without any flash, without any dash, sold out the Garden more times than Elvis. That's how big he was back in the day. He was bigger than Hogan back in the day.
Wow.
You know, here was a guy, you know, like I said, they called him the Italian Superman. He just, you know, people just loved him. And, you know, he held the title for, you know, I think 11 years at one stretch and 5 years at another stretch. And, you know, it's all predetermined, but he was the draw.
And yeah.
I can honestly remember he got beat by superstar Billy Graham down in Maryland, and they had the rematch at the Garden, and a buddy of mine got his company comped them tickets or something. I got offered $100 for my ticket outside, and I wouldn't take it because I had to see this fight. So that's the kind of draw he was. And, you know, finally he's getting his due, Hall of Fame, because, you know, he was like the Babe Ruth of wrestling. He was the biggest draw back then. Yeah. But, you know, that's when a match would go an hour and you'd be like at the edge of your seat. Now you don't have that anymore because these guys, you know, simply don't know how to tell a story.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
That's the problem.
It's all about the story.
Yeah.
It's the story, isn't it, Joe?
Yeah, that's what it all comes down to.
I'm looking at an email here from a guy you must know, Pete, named Tim Merrill.
Yeah, okay, yeah, from Korea.
Korea, yeah. Says, Gary, I just wanted to tell you, man, that I was on holiday in Thailand, was walking down the beach, listening to you and Bud on Pete's show, talking about your craft, and, man, I stopped looking at the ocean, and I just sat down in a chair and really tuned in with what was being said. You can tell in your tone and voices you guys had had. Well, there we were, Pete. You mean he listens to this in Korea?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Like, you can download the thing. I don't know if Todd fixed the archives or not. Did you, Todd? Or no?
I did most of it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm still working it.
Yeah, you can,
very
you can get
cool.
It, you can get it on iTunes. Yeah, because people are emailing me and bitching, Todd. I don't know what to tell them. I'm not the boss.
Tell them that it's in the works and we're getting them uploaded as soon as we can.
You know, I told them you changed servers or something.
It's true, yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Todd, how did you end up in film? What got you interested in it?
You know, I've loved movies since I was a young kid. Got into it. First childhood memories, Boy Who Cried Werewolf, Night of the Living Dead, that movie, on a triple feature, and I just kind of kept going after that. Loved them. Star Wars came along, changed my life. I knew that's what I had to do. I was hoping someday just to be able to make a movie and give back kind of what I experienced. I'd have a bad day. I was from a broken family and had a very rough upbringing, and I'd have a bad week in a crummy situation. I'd go into a movie theater, and I'd kind of lose all that for an hour and a half. And my hope was to maybe do that for someone else one day.
Wow, cool. Very cool story.
Yeah, that sort of mirrors mine because, you know, when I graduated high school in 1970, and basically I was looking at going to Vietnam, and, you know, here I was fat, overweight, you know, and no future, so I got lost in that whole Times Square scene, and then my number never came up, so. But that was my escape, you know. My life sucks so much that I'd rather just get lost in some story, and, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I read a lot today now, too.
I think people that enjoy movies also enjoy books a lot, the same, and probably the same for many of the same reasons. You can sure sometimes what's going on in the book or in the movie is a lot better than what's going on in your house or down the block or at school or whatever. I just remember being able to climb into a movie and just disappear into it for a whole afternoon.
What were those movies for you, Gary?
Oh, golly. They were usually, back when I was a kid, the big adventure movies were anything with Burt Lancaster, pirate movies. I love
Crimson
pirate.
Crimson Pirate.
Right.
I just found that DVD in Hong Kong today, of all places.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think I'm going to order it. It's only like $4.
Of the Crimson Pirate. Wow. Yeah,
what a great movie. If you can't get out there, we usually film the panels. So what I'll do is I'll make sure you get a copy of the panel to throw on the DVD as an extra.
Okay, cool.
At least we can do that because I'm sure we're gonna film this thing. And I'm sure we'll have you back on before you know, we get 6 weeks. So we usually have what me and Ken called stumbling drunkenly down the road to Wasteland. So we'll probably have you on for that, you know, a little warm up for the appearance. And, dude, I'm really looking forward to hanging out at Wasteland and having a good time with this whole thing. So, you know.
Yeah, me too. Me too, man. Yeah. I can't wait. Joe Ken Kish, the fellow that Pete's been talking about that runs Cinema Wasteland, is just like the best. He's just a really cool dude all the way, which is one of the reasons Wasteland is so popular.
True.
Yeah, it's not like these other shows, and that's why I bitch about, you know, okay, we have another zombie from The Walking Dead. You can get her autograph for $30. Who gives a shit? She was on screen for 10 minutes. This man has been in the movies for, what, 50 years? You know?
Yeah.
It just boggles me. And that's, you know, see, the fans at Wasteland are different. They want to learn about this stuff. And, you know, Gary's a great teacher. And, you know, to a certain extent, you know, with my experiences, so am I. And that's why it works. So
right, it works.
We're really looking forward to it. So, Joe, it's been great. Hope to see you at Wasteland. Oh, my pleasure. And until next week, stay sick and we'll see you then.
Right house.
So grab yourself a seat on Saturday.